Today is Sunday, February 5th, 2023, and we sitting in Yerushalayim are laughing at all of you on the Eastern Seaboard. I understand in New York, David told me earlier that his children are in New York for a simcha, and some shuls didn't open on Shabbos. That's how bad it is. The temperature makes Moscow look like Miami Beach. So Ashreinu Shezachinu. However, on a much more serious note, I want to dedicate the shiur today to a great lady who died, I think it was last Thursday, and it's amazing that the Jerusalem Post has not had an article. I'm talking about Miriam Baumel, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, the mother of Zach Baumel, and someone that my wife, myself, and my greater family got to know very well. As I have mentioned, my middle daughter was the head of the International Coalition for Missing Israeli Soldiers, and I don't have to tell you the story of Zach Baumel. Miriam outlived her wonderful husband, Yonah, by quite a few years, more than 10 at least. And she died at 91, and at least was privileged to closure that, and there you come to Putin, which is so hard to understand, a man who did such chesed for a Jewish family and somehow got back Zach's body, and she was privileged to see closure on that level. My heart goes out to the family. She was an Isha Gedola, and I learned a lot from her, a lot from Yonah. It brings back endless memories. And I think she's the last of the three missing in action, the Katz, Feldman, and Baumel family. She's the last of the parents. Everyone else is gone, and she's the last, and life moves on, and we have to go further and do good deeds and recall Zach, Zichrona Levracha. He was Hesda boy in the Gush, and the rest is history, Sultan Yaakov, and all that went with it way back in 1982. Tehei Zichra Baruch. Let me move on, and I just want to show you, if you think I was making it up about haircuts and going to barbers, and the story mentioned last week with my coming in to take a haircut around the corner from YU. And remember I said to you, Mr. Caruso was shaking, and lo and behold, I see my memory is good, Audubon Avenue, and here's the advertisement. I'm holding in front of me the commentator from June 4th, 1953. And here, if you can make it out, there is the advertisement. We advertise in the commentator the year-round. V. Period Caruso, tonsorial artist for the discriminating type. 418 Audubon Avenue, corner of 186th Street. So Mark, the Rebbe didn't make it up. It's legitimate.
What's a Chesterfield?
Chesterfield. Then, in yeshiva, there was always a representative of the students who was in charge of pushing Chesterfield. And I don't know if he probably got paid for it. I think he sold. I don't know what the story was. We never knew. Cigarettes. Yeah, no one knew that it was you're killing yourself. They thought it was like today, you put a sucking candy in your mouth. So that was the cigarettes. Okay, we have a fascinating shiur today. I'm going to show you a fascinating source. But the question is legitimate. We're back in Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Tet Zayin, the of the volumes. In that volume, Siman Lamed Vav. And here you have a classic question about Shiva, who wakes up in the middle of life and wants to straighten himself out and marry, have children. And of course, he's looking to marry a younger woman who can still have children. He's in his early 50s, according to the tshuva. And can he take his white hairs, his beard, whatever it is, his head of hair, and dye it black, that the lady should think he's younger? And obviously, what you have here is a double sha'ila. On one hand, the question of simlat isha, dyeing hair. And on the other question, harama, this is geneva dat. You tell the lady you appear with a black hair, makes the cheshbon, you're in your 30s, early 40s, she's not going to believe you're in your early 50s. And this question of, the minute we cite the question of dying, immediately we have a number of Gemaras that deal with it, and deal with it within various different contexts. But the underlying issue is a man allowed to die? Is this simlat isha? And the ramifications go, it's not just the hair, it's earrings, nose rings, all these indications that we take for granted are feminine, is a man allowed to? Now, last week we analyzed at length the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and there, very interestingly, it's basically nothing to do with man and woman. It has to do with taking a haircut with an Oved Avodah Zarah, Gentiles, non-Jews, and it seems there was a problem of simply sakanat nefashat. So Chazal were matir, look into a mirror, make believe you're an important person, that you're checking if he's giving you a good haircut, and how you will look, and he'll be afraid to harm you. So you see that right away the question comes up, looking in a mirror, and that's also part of feminine activity. Reb Moshe Feinstein, and we cited this last week, Reb Moshe deals with it in a tshuva, and Reb Moshe seems to feel that looking in a mirror per se is not forbidden. It only is forbidden if it results in some sort of feminine activity. I'm using the word feminine activity for lack of a better word in English, but it means emulating what women will do. But if you're just looking in a mirror, that itself is not forbidden. Reb Menashe Klein, on the other hand, differs with Reb Moshe, and I quoted already the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll quote today, and it would seem that looking in a mirror unto itself is a forbidden act for a man. That, in other words, this concept of looking in a mirror and looking how you look and playing with your face and your hair and your eyebrows and your lips, that this is feminine, not masculine. Well, this is an interesting question. Are we allowed to look into mirrors? And we'll come back to it later today. What I want to begin with is a very fascinating Gemara, which, believe it or not, is halacha lemaisa, as I will show you. And this Gemara, too, doesn't deal with man, woman, but the minute you get involved with the mirror, the question of man, woman comes up. And I'm quoting now from the Gemara in Shabbat, Staf Kuf Mem Tet Omid Aleph. And it's right towards the bottom of the Gemara, the Tanya, Ein Ro'in B'mareh B'Shabbat, Rebbe Meir Matir B'mareh HaKavua B'Kotel. Interesting. You can't look into a mirror on Shabbat. Why? Rabbi Meir is matir if it's a mirror attached to the wall that you can't lift off. The Gemara asks right away, "My shana hakavua b'kotel, What's the difference if it's attached or not attached? If you're not allowed to use me, you're not allowed all the time. And your answer is, Adahachi v'hachi matkeh, that he'll remember. What's it talking about? Right, let me fill you in. What it's talking about is very simple. We have here Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark sitting here. He was involved after the army as a prison chaplain. And he knows the rules and regulations of a prison chaplain. I'm not certain whether it was Jonathan Pollard or someone else. I read some memoir literature. Someone was going in to visit, let's say, Jonathan Pollard. And he had with him personal items, including his tefillin bag. They examine everything you're bringing in. As I told you, Rabban Soloveitchik, who could barely walk, you all know he suffered for many years as a result of a stroke. Rabban told me he couldn't go with his walker. They're worried that there's a bomb inside the metal. I mean, it's beyond words. And this Rabban Soloveitchik, they had to help me walk to get to Jonathan Pollard. Someone was going in with tefillin, and they take apart, at least they were sophisticated enough, you know, it's a big problem. No Gentile really knows what tefillin are. You know what happened on the airplane a year ago with the tefillin, what went on, and there were a few incidents like that. I understand now in training the airplane crew, stewardess and stewardesses, they explain to them what tefillin are. They shouldn't think it's a person ready to blow up the plane, because it is a strange sight. What did they find in his tefillin bag? What we spoke about last week, the mirror. Many of the young generation use a mirror. As I told you, we grew up, we didn't use mirrors. And one of the Talmidim listening wrote to me that the Satmurur went out of his way that the tefillin shouldn't be perfectly centered, to give a message that Mokom Yesh Berosh Lanich Shnei Zugot Tefillin, and you don't have to go crazy with the mirror trying and moving and moving. All right, but I'm not here to be critical. People want to use mirrors because isn't the hate. They took the mirror away. You know why they took the mirror away? Because they're chayshish. You give it to the prisoner and they'll use it to cut his throat, to saw down bars, to escape. I mean, think what you can do. A mirror with a sharp edge.
Glass. It's a glass mirror. It's a big problem. Okay. Any kind of glass.
And any kind of glass. All right. They took it away. They wouldn't let him in with that mirror. This is exactly what the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is talking about that on Shabbat, if you look into the mirror and you see a hair, something wrong, you forget it's Shabbat, you quickly, automatically lift the mirror out and cut off the hair. And that's what the chashash is. Let me read to you, I'm reading now from the Schottenstein translation. And by the way, their work is excellent. Sometimes I'm critical of Art Scroll, just be aware I'm critical of their history books. That's the tragedy. But the Gemara goes way beyond Sansino, and to a certain degree beyond Steinsaltz, when simply explaining it very clearly. And I'm quoting, if a person looks into a mirror to groom his hair, we fear that if he sees some hairs protruding, he might trim them. Cutting hair is included in the malacha of gozeis, shearing. Although the interval might be shorter if the mirror is not attached, because he can take it with him to the place of the scissors, there is still sufficient time for him to remember that is the Sabbath. The edge of a metal mirror is as sharp as a knife. Since he can use the mirror itself to cut his hair, he will not go fetch a pair of scissors.
And we used polished metal mirrors.
Whatever, that's the chashash in the Gemara. And the Gemara, you see, I understand the Gemara very well. If you have to remove the mirror and it takes time, you remember Shabbat. But sometimes I don't think there's a person in the world that wasn't Mechalel Shabbos mitasek, where there's no, it's not considered Chilul Shabbos. But I know a story with the Rav. I know from, I can still remember who told it to me. Henoch Kolb, he was a Talmud of the Rav in the early 40s. I knew him from Israel in his later years. He settled here. If I'm not mistaken, he taught in Elizabeth for a long time. It can be checked out. And he told me a story about the Rav that he was once in Boston in Shabbos in the Rav's house, and the Rav went in to get a sefer, and the Rav came out crying, that he automatically turned on a light. His hand automatically, you know, it's mitasek, it's called mitasek. It's not even a malacha. But the Rav, in his sidkit, felt overwhelmed, and he came out of here. And if I recall correctly, Henoch Kolb told me the Rav was mumbling, "Ich werde bald davon bringen a Korban Chatas." That, you know, you do an Isha, the Oraita, you have to bring a Korban Chatas. And the Rav was so upset. But it's automatic. See, that's the Gemara. That's the Gemara. And that's what they're worried about. And that's what they're worried about in prison. And what an interesting story. And once you get involved with this Gemara, you see, wait a minute, this is Shabbos? And what about during the week? Maybe during the week also you can't look in a mirror, not because of Shabbos, because it's a woman. She's the one who looks into a mirror, not a man. And this is a Gemara which carries through and also brings Achronim who are dealing with the very problem we are dealing with. And you look into Rabbi Nasha Klein, and he says to Gemara, "Ein roim b'mare b'Shabbos, u'mefarish b'Gemara b'mare b'matechet." Mipnei, listen to the words of the Gemara. Mipnei she'adam asui lahashir b'nimim hamadudalot. So from that Gemara, if you're medayek on the words of the Gemara, that an Adam, a person, tell me, how do you translate Adam? A male. Adam v'chava. So you look into the Gemara and you're medayek in the word Adam. What does that mean? A male cannot look into a mirror on Shabbat. But wait a minute, during the week he's permitted? You understand? So here Rabbi Nasha Klein says, the word Adam is not just for a male. He translates it, human being. Adam loved Dafka. The ish asur b'chol inyan. What's the Gemara talking about? Shabbat. A man is forbidden to look into a mirror all the time. Weekday. Shabbat. But what does Adam mean? A human being. Then it can be talking about a woman. And during the week she can look into a mirror as much as she wants. But on Shabbat, even a woman can't look into the mirror for fear she will cut the hair away. And this gets involved in the whole description. What about a man? What about during the week? And from the Gemara, he says, it's not a proof. Adam can mean a human being. It can mean a woman as well. But nevertheless, you look into the Mefarshim of this Baraita, you can look into Tosfot, Avol be'ish li'olam asur lehistakel b'mareh, v'hinei chosifu tam, the ha'ish af b'chol asua she'eino derech kavod. And what does that mean? That for a man, it may very well be forbidden not just on Shabbat. It would be forbidden during the week. Not derech kavod. What does it mean, not derech kavod? So you see, again, I can't say we're black and white correct in our interpretation. Rav Menashe Klein is struggling too. But I think it means as follows. For a woman, in Yiddish, she's hard to translate. She's playing around. She's wasting time in front of the mirror. For a woman, that is derech kavod. She has to come out of it looking decent, looking good, looking feminine mystique, call it. For a man to play around in front of the mirror? This is a man. This is what you're doing? What, are you wearing a skirt? What's going on here? It's not derech kavod. And from this Gemara, you might absolutely be able to bring a proof. It's not just on Shabbat for a man. The Gemara is talking about human beings, stressing that even a woman who's permitted to look in a mirror during the week, all right, she can play around, but not on Shabbat. A man, Shabbat forbidden, during the week it's forbidden, not derech kavod. But you see, you have to struggle with this pshat. Why? First of all, Chazal already say, a Talmud Chacham who goes out the Revav al Bigdo, dirty clothes, Zechil Hashem, Zechilu Kvod Talmidei Chachamim. I remember with the Rav that Kolzman, his wife was alive, his clothes always matched. After she died, I remember people commented that one time he came to class with blue pants and a brown jacket, if I recall correctly. You see, people are looking at Talmud Chacham, Derech Kavod, Slabatka. I don't have to tell you, Kavod Adam. A lot of people criticize Slabatka until today. Students, clean shaven, latest clothes, latest fashion, ties, Kavod Adam. So how can you say a man can't look into the mirror? It's not a kavod. You have to see that you look right, you look proper. So look into the Mishnah Lachat. Unfortunately, I just experienced this, that yes, derech hakavod, if he's looking in to see that he looks proper. Michush einayim. Michush einayim. I just went through an eye infection. I know, right? And Imadala Kaddish Baruch Hu went to Dr. Ephraim Rosen. I'm fine now. The medicine worked. The eye drops worked. The antibiotic eye drops worked. But if you're looking into a mirror to check your eyes, to see what the eyes, what they're admitting, they asked me right away, is there pus coming out, etc. And this is derech hakavod. This has to be absolutely permissible. And here, Rabbi Menashe Klein says something, we'll come to this later, but I think he hits the nail on the head. Ubochen libot, we would say levavot, hu yodeya. And you know what it depends upon? What your intentions are. Someone standing in front of the mirror, who is the fairest looking man of all? And he's playing with his mustache. If you look at movies out of the 1930s, all the so-called handsome men had mustaches, and he's playing with his mustache, and he's playing with his tie, and he's playing with his hair, and he's moving his glasses around to see at what angle he should leave them and what angle he should place his kippah. That is forbidden. Bochen levavot. But if you're looking in the mirror, all right, I don't want to be disrespectful. Students are going to look at me. The audience is going to look at me. I don't want them to say I'm a slob, that I don't care about my appearance. You're looking to see that you see properly, that the eyeglasses are adjusted properly, the kippah, that it's you don't want it like a Pepsi Cola bottle top only in back of your head. You want it, you know, the whole shayla, how big does the kippah have to say, be? Rav Moshe wrote about it. Others have written. Rakefet has a very simple answer. Kippah has to be big enough that people see you wearing a kippah, plain and simple. And then when you're looking at the mirror, nothing wrong. And who can tell? Bochein levavot Hashem. And this is the way Reb Menashe Klein explains the Gemara in Shabbos, the mirror, the woman, the Adam, the Isha. And if it's forbidden on Shabbos, it can be forbidden for two reasons for a man. One, because it's feminism, and two, you might take it to cut off a hair which you don't feel is in proper place, and you don't think, you do it automatically. Oy, it's Mechallel Shabbos, easy to take the mirror off. If you have to go and get scissors, if you have to think, oy, the hair is not in place, the mustache is not in place, let me get scissors, that pause will enable you to think. And once you think, then you remember it's Shabbos. But if you're doing the mirror to look decent, then it has to be permissible. And this is Reb Menashe Klein. Now he quotes a source that is fascinating. And here we get involved with the Sefer Hasidim. You have no idea how much Ashkenazic practice was influenced by the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim, we're going back to the 1100s, and it was a period of Ashkenazic piety, Hasidei Ashkenaz. This was a period where a lot has been researched, although I have to say until today, we don't have a proper edited edition of the Sefer Hasidim, which we can feel it's correct, the texts are absolutely correct. And maybe we'll never have a proper edited edition, because what you're dealing with is from that went through many hands, they were copied and copied and copied. Each one copying it may have had a personal bias, something he wanted to add, something he wanted to delete, and you'll always see the Sefer Hasidim. Reb Moshe will deal with it, Reb Menashe Klein, we've dealt with it before, we'll come to it again, that they'll say, this is impossible. Sefer Chassidim couldn't have said this. Another, what? It's written, it's a manuscript, we have to be Melamed Zchut. Okay. But the Sefer Chassidim had a great influence. This is why in the Ashkenazic world, until today, there's certain practices that we have that the Sfadim don't have. We're more machmir in certain things than the Sfadim. And part of it goes back to the Hasidei Ashkenaz, the Sefer Chassidim and others, and the Kabbalistic influences. It was a very formative period that created the Ashkenazic Jewry. Ultimately, it's codified by the Ramah. The Ramah already is a much later period, but many times his sources go back to this period in Ashkenazic history. Now, he quotes here from the Sefer Chassidim. You'll see the simon there, it's simon shinayin tet, but the story is beautiful. And here it takes us into the whole question of the age difference in marriage. And life has taught me when you're younger, the age difference shouldn't be that great. In other words, you're getting married at 22. I wouldn't suggest you marry a girl who's 30 years old. I wouldn't suggest a man, the age difference may be less of a factor, but when people grow older, they grow more understanding in life, and they can accept and they can compromise. The age factor is not as important. And I've seen with my own eyes in second marriages, I've seen talmidim of mine, friends of mine, they remarry someone younger, 10 years, 12 years, even 15 years, and the marriages work out very well. And they're older, they can understand. It's an older person, younger person, different values, different upbringing. You bring it together, you forge a relationship. Now, here, the Sefer Chassidim tells a story that they tell the man who was on in years that this beautiful lady, Isha Plonit Yafa, B'mokim Ploni, Hi Chafetz HaBecha, and this lady has expressed an interest in him. First of all, what do you see from here? That beauty matters. Any girl who tells you, I don't give a darn how I look, and I've taught women like this, and I can tell you Nechama Leibowitz, if you know her autobiography, and she would regale me with stories. But Nechama told me, and I later checked it out, and the biographies all say the same thing. She came from a wealthy background. They were Litvish Jews in business, and they came to Germany. Talmidei Chachamim, but her mother pleaded with her, buy new clothes, look nice. And she wasn't interested in all that. She was just interested in developing her mind, you see. Today, someone like Nechama would not have a problem. You have Stern College. You have so many opportunities in the United States, in Israel as well today. You want to develop your mind in Torah? The sky's the limit for men and for women. And Nechama suffered. And this is why she married her uncle. She told me her uncle was a bachelor. And he was a very successful businessman and a Talmud Chacham. And he was the only one who understood her. He encouraged her. It was his niece. He encouraged her. Look, if you're interested in learning and scholarship and books, go for it. You don't have to stand in front of a mirror and put on endless lipstick. And that's Nechama. Later in life, he realized, I got to get married. I have a niece who adores me. All right. And she took very good care of him. And I've gotten the question many times. She told me the world makes a mistake. That they think she married her uncle out of pity. He wasn't married. He wasn't well. She married him out of love. And when they married, he was blind later in life. Not when they married. That's the question I always get. She used to walk with him in Kiryat Moshe when they lived in that area, then in Romema, and she would hold on to him. He wasn't seeing properly. But that was later. When they married, he was well. She hoped she would have children. She never did. She said many, and this is all quoted. It's not only she's told me, but it's in the people who did their research that she said, I would have given away all my scholarship to have my own children. But okay, Nechama lives on, and we were just talking about her in my house because my great-granddaughter had to do a report on her and got a prize for a good report. And we all said, and you didn't even consult your great-grandparents, you know, to them. They don't realize that these were living figures for us. For her, it's like a legendary figure. For us, Nechama alive and kicking. And so, but you see, for most men, the girl has to be attractive. And I compliment Rakefet In 1972, we had a student in Michoacán, the Machal program, the first Machal that he taught. And this girl got very interested in learning. And I wrote, and she wrote to me from America when she went back, how she loves to learn Gemara and Rashi and Tulsa. And I wrote back to her, Gesundheit, fine, good. She came from good stock, her father, her mother, her brothers. I taught many members of the family. But I said on one condition, before you open the Gemara, you have to put lipstick on. And she wrote back to me, Rebbe, I'm listening to you. I'm putting this Baruch Hashem. She's a grandmother today, maybe be a great grandmother for all I know, and very successful in chinuch, mechanechet, b'tamidah chachama, etc. So there is something here that the Torah. If you go through Shas and you go through here, Sefer Rishonim, Sefer Chassidim, Chassidei Ashkenaz. So you might think, well, what do they know? What do they know about life? Here you see it, that Isha Plonit Yafa, that the guy gets all excited, a beautiful lady, all right, he's an older man. Now, I don't know what that means. Why? I'll tell you why I don't know what it means. Because if she saw him, she knows how old he is. The whole question that we're going to see doesn't get underway. If she didn't see him, what does it mean, chafetza b'cha? You follow? I'm asking simply the facts on the ground. Mimanavshach, if she saw him and wants him, what do we need all the questions that we'll see? And if she didn't see him, what does it mean, chafetza? So I'll tell you what my interpretation is. It's like a website. The websites today, and particularly I know in the state of Israel, there are quite a few, and they do melechet shemayim, God's work. God bless them. I have two grandsons who married very beautifully and essentially met their wives through websites. So, you know, you go to a website and you get a whole description. Someone might have gone over to the lady and said, look, you're not married. There's a guy living five villages down. He's older than you are, but he's very successful in business. He davens with a minyan three times a day. He's also a nice person. As Edel. How do we say that in English? I don't know. Edel. No, help me out. Yomo, Edel in English. Adin. Sensitive, nice, good. It's very important, you know, because when you marry, you're used to being so self-centered that you can't tolerate anything else, anything different, anything that's not within your purview. But a successful marriage, you have to live, let live. Generosity, decency, understanding, encouragement. So that's what I think it means. They told her, and she said, oh, I don't care that he's 10 years older, 15 years older. Aza mensch, he's such a mensch, let me meet him. And all right, this is the way I interpret it. The Amru Liechad, one man, they called a man, Isha Plonit Yafa, underline the word Yafa, B'makom Ploni, Chi Chafetza B'cha. Shmali Eitzateinu, V'lech Shema, listen to our advice, go there, meet her, but before you go, V'titzbasa Arecha B'shacha, dye your hair black, and T'yesfura Shemcha Zakein, and let her think you're not old. V'hitomah ma shebliba. Now let us take what's in her heart. This is Sefer Chassidim. I have to say, it's a shocking passage. You're advising the man to dye his hair black. Wow. If that's the case, how can there be an Issa? These are Hasidei Ashkenaz. And if they're advising you dye your hair black, wow. And Toma Shalipa, what does that mean? Here she wants to meet him. But you see, with all these shidduchim, Elliot, you can go online. I remember for one of my grandsons, I paid all the fees. You have to pay a fee, they have to see that you're serious. And you know, you can see something. He went out with many, many, many women. I don't want to tell you how many. It's over 90, less than 100, okay? Draw your own conclusions. And he went out, and you meet the lady. It's not what you saw in the paper. Forget about the looks. It's not what you saw in the description. You know, people, it's the old question. Marry early. You grow older together. You merge together. On the other hand, there's always the fear. You can grow apart. It's not what you married, not what you were. You're older, you're setting your ideas, you're set already. You know what you're getting. Sometimes it's hard to adjust. It's not black and white. Nu was the Gemara saying, Psachim, Kekriyat Yamsof, that what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Mezavek Zivuchim, and it's like Kriyat Yamsof. Okay.
In what way is it
to Kriyat Yamsuf? In what way? Kriyat Yamsuf had many aspects to it. The Jews were afraid to jump in. Nachshon ben Amidav had to lead the way. People are so frightened, hesitant. Jump. Do. Go in. Then HaKadosh Baruch has to do. There's more to it. The Egyptians have to run after you. They have to think they're going to be saved. And Kadosh Baruch Hu does the miracle and they drowned, you're saved. The Jews have to know that the Egyptians are dead. Remember, they were worried maybe just as they came up off the, out of the water into the shore, the Egyptians will follow. And they saw there all the gold and silver floating around. The Medrash describes it in the water. They knew already the Egyptians were gone. So there's a lot involved.
What does this last aspect have to do with Shidduchim?
No, it means it's that difficult. It's not a question of a shidduch. Kriyat Yamsuf is not a shidduch. But
who is it difficult for?
Who is it difficult
what
for?
What does Rashi say? What does the Farshim say? Who is it difficult for?
As I understand the Gemara, it's difficult for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because when he tries to put two people together, you try to make shidduchim, see what your percentage of success will be. Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yamsuf has many difficulties, but you can do it. You have a better interpretation? I see the smile on your face. When you go through Kriyat Yamsuf, we'll talk further. Until then, I would advise you to enjoy your brunch and Baruch Hashem, health and happiness. Anyway, back here. Now, the man is bothered by this. Why? Because the man says, Omalehem, Chalili li lahatot ota eletireh shani zakein al techalel et bitcha laznota zeh hamasi bitcho li zakein. Wow. The man was a decent individual. And he quotes the Gemara that, imagine you marry off your young, beautiful, capable daughter to a much older man, and Chazal are talking for money, it's snut. You're giving your daughter away to a much older man, it's like you're trading his money for her sexual abilities as a young woman. And the man says, what do you, I should dye my beard, I should be a phony, I should fake her out? Who do you think I am? Oh, na'ah, chas v'chalila. But what do you see from his answer? That if not for the fact that there's fakerai, I'm using Yiddish word, there's phoniness involved, he can dye his beard. There's nothing wrong with it. This is Sefer Chassidim. And this is a proof that you can dye a beard. There's no problem with dyeing a beard. The bigger problem is the hona'ah, that you're fooling the woman. And what do we see from here? That if the woman is willing, let's say,
how's that different? If, let's say, she knows his age, but he wants to, for women, you know a woman's age, but there's a big difference whether she's putting on makeup or not putting on makeup.
Good. We'll come to that in Rav David HaLevi. Exactly. But hold off. Look at these words. But if she knows the truth, he says, Avolim biatzma biratzona rotzel lisalazakein muta. And so you see, there was a debate here, and the man turned out to be a tzaddik. He said, look, I can dye my beard, it's mutter. That's not the shaila here. But onat devarim, I'm lying. I'm all right, it's, you know, you can be melamed zchut, a white lie, shalom bayit, to marry, have children, but this is a lie. The whole marriage is beginning based upon sheker. But he says, let me go with my white hair, let me appear before her, and if she says, look, I'm taking the total picture. And this is what the Gemara in Sota is very powerful. Daf Beit Amud Aleph, the Zivik Rishon is Min HaShemayim, and Zivik Sheni is Lefi Ma'asav. And I've seen that so many times, including in my own immediate family. Mamish, you marry young. Marriage, many times, you marry, it can be family reasons. You know, I always say my mother and father, when they were growing up, once lived in the same building and in Harlem, that my paternal grandparents and my maternal grandparents both had apartments in Harlem. Well, ultimately, they made a shidduch. The parents made the shidduch. I have a son, and we have a daughter not married, and why not? And ain't a chinami. But then later in life, people established reputations the second time around. I know world-famous people wanted to marry my mother. They're willing to waive. In other words, you'll hear them, all right, he's older. But what a person to be married to. What a schut. And this was the Rav, when he tells the story, Rav Yitzchok Hanan Spector, that brings the Gemara in Sota to life. You know what story I'm talking about, with the woman came to him when his son was widowed. So the women ran after him, Zivik Sheni, and there was this woman that they had proposed when he was 14 years of age. She came from a very wealthy home, and that's the way they made a shidduch. I have a son in Ilui. I want a daughter from a wealthy family so he can sit and learn another 10 years, gegessen kest, as we called it, in Yiddish. And this lady came to look at him. She wanted to look at him. And he was in the kitchen eating, and she opened the door, took a peek, and it evidently was eating mechmeis noodles with his fingers. She said, what? Aza woman, she's not trained, he's not for me. 50 years later, he was widowed and she was widowed. She came and pleaded with him, you'll never have to worry, I have so much money, you just speed the rav and paskin and write shuvat, you'll never have vetnish. Came mo daigin, and there'll be nothing to worry about. And if it's Ochan, and the rav would get hysterical with laughter, I'd tell the story, it's like, ich hab nicht gewen gut genug die erste mal, bin ich nicht gut genug die zweite mal. I wasn't good enough for you the first time around, I'm not good enough for you the second time around. They say with Rav Ovadia, when his Margalit died, I heard from the family, women from all over the world, women worth billions of dollars, not millions, just the schut to be married to him. You understand? So see, this woman, if she'll know the truth, and she says, I know how old he is, I understand, but afal pi kein, I want to be married, that's the way he will marry her. And but what do you see from this story in Sefer Chassidim? Absolutely no prohibition for a man to dye his hair. It's not just, it's universal. People dye their hair. And this, if you recall, a few weeks ago, I quoted a Gemara in Nazir, Daf Lamed Tet Amid Aleph, when the Gemara was dealing with the whole question, how do the hairs grow? When they grow, and, but it's talking about elderly men dyeing their hair. No, you can take simply the pshat, it means goyim, not Jewish men. Elderly men dyeing their hair. But you can take another way to look at the Gemara. Who says it's only goyim? Who says the elderly men were non-Jews? Maybe they were Jews. And from that Gemara too, if you take the pshat that it's regular Jewish elderly men, or can be men, Jew and non-Jew, you also see that the Gemara never questioned about dyeing the hair. They took it for granted that this is universal. Now, he also goes, and this is also fascinating, that what are they talking about there? That dyeing the beard, the Lashon in the Sefer Chassidim. So here too, I don't know what the pshat really is. I'll show you in a second. Wait a minute. We have, I once had a head of hair, you remember? What a, God, I was young, hair. So what about dyeing your hair? What do you mean dyeing the beard? You have to dye the beard, you have to dye the hair as well. So Sefer Chassidim says here that generally speaking, your head is covered with a hat. So that there, you don't have to dye, it's only the beard. But I'll tell you, this may be correct in teaching. What's today, not me, I'm still in a time warp. I never saw the Rav teach with his hat on. Mark, my time, I don't know in your time, never.
Took the hat, put it on the desk, and took the
yarmulke. Right. And more than that, if you read Revel, Revel is an important volume. I give credit to Rothkopf, who wrote the volume. And on him, I kick him because he was too good. You understand what I'm saying? It set the bar too high, and people look at them. Why didn't you write Rabbi Shmuel Belkin right away to give you 101 answers? I want to do a doctorate that's easy, not edit a text, take a secondary literature and go a little further. But to create something, yesh meyayin, no one's around today, unfortunately. Okay.
But they didn't wear the hats, but... No,
they wore a real yarmulke. One second. So I just have to tell you, if you look into Revel, I tell the story there where they're, 1930s, vying for positions, a seminary graduate and a yeshiva college graduate. The seminary graduate gets the position. Why? Because the yeshiva guy sat there and didn't take off his hat. It's insulting. And I know whenever I rode in the elevator in 18 Berlin and Rabbi Dresden, my original neighbors, the original settlers, if a lady came in, he took off his hat and held it against his heart. I don't know what that means, but I never saw the lady. It's respect for the feminine mystique. And I always insist that a lady has to go first. That I learned from the Rav. I told you the story. I can't give the name. They said to me, don't. They swore to me this, B'didi Havi Yovda. that this lady was going to Barnard. I told it many times, going to Barnard, and she came from our Gad Shahim. And Shabbos morning after davening, they came home, they made Kiddush. The boy sat down and learned Gemara with the father, and she was pushed into the kitchen to help the mother make lunch. And Barnard, she's becoming a bit of a feminist. She resents that attitude. And one time there was a family wedding. Her brother was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, still is. I just corresponded with him recently. And the brother says, meet me at Yeshiva, first hall, and I'll drive you to the wedding. So she comes up and she waits. Her brother comes out. Brother comes out of the elevator with Moria, with the Rav, with Moria Rebbe. He had just finished Shia. This is a new world. I'm living in Israel. First hall didn't exist in my time. First hall, the Rav is coming out with her, and he just says, Rebbe, this is my sister, her name, and says to his sister, this is Moria Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, and they come to the door, and the brother and sister wait for the Rav to walk out. They're holding the door. The Rav says, no, ladies first. At that moment, any doubts and qualms she had about Torah Hashem disappeared completely. Feminism, all questions were answered. Ladies first. The Gadol Hadar, respect for the feminine mystique. And as a guy named Rakefet says, when men can give birth, then they'll ask questions about Shiloh HaSan Isha. Until then, keep your mouth shut, you dummy. Okay, so, fascinating details. The head, but I have a simple question. Yeah, but they're intimate. They see each other in the house. Come on, he takes off the hat occasionally. See, Rabbi Menashe Klein quotes the Sefer Chassidim making this difference. I don't know. It would seem to me that, but when they go to sleep, I don't know. The Chassidim wear, I wear a kippah, by the way, when I go to sleep. I have a sleeping kippah. If you're familiar with Agnon, Mark, you're familiar with Agnon, I think it's in Tamulshin Shom, but I remember I read all of Agnon when I was a kid. They're very impressive. So Ben Sion Yadla, that was he was the Magid Meisharim in Yerushalayim 100+ years ago. So when Rav Yadla, how do you rebuke the people? How do you give them Musa before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur? How do you give them Musa? That's tzaddikim. So he would say, you go to sleep and you turn over in your bed and your yarmulke falls off. Mitschleft mit a blazing cup. Your head is uncovered. So you see, that's what I'm saying. So I don't understand entirely, but the Menashe Klein tries to make this distinction that why did they tell him, dye your beard and not your head, because she doesn't see it. Anyway, the medicine's off there, or the Sefer Chassidim, that he goes before the woman and he uncovers his head and bows before her. So that even if his beard is black, she sees that the head is white. And then she makes her decision. And I hope she married him and they lived happily ever after. So you see, if we would leave off the tshuva now, there's ample room to be mekil. Is there really a prohibition of dyeing your hair black? Maybe a man's allowed. Maybe that's neutral. It's not just feminine. But men as well occasionally want to dye their beard, want to look good, want to look respectful. I can understand the feeling. There's only one problem, and it's the lashon of the Rambam. And this Lashon, this is the real curveball. Let me show it to you. It's based upon a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. It's Hilchat Avodah Zarah, Perik Yud Bet, Halacha Yud. And I'll read the Lashon of the Rambam to you. It's this gets you involved in quite a world of trying to understand the Rambam, derive it, and who is correct. Hamalakeit sa'arot lebanot mitoch hashchorot meirosho, o mizikno, meishel yelakeit sara achat loke mipnei she'ada eidei isha. And I'll translate it, that if you pluck out one white hair from among the black, your zakan, the top of your head, one hair, your chayav malkot, because this is emulating lo tilbash simlat isha. Wow. Go one step further. V'chein im tzava sa'aroshacha meisheyitzpa sa'ara levana achat loker. Mark, not just plucking out with tweezers, right? Who takes care of your what, gabatenayim, eyelashes, right? In English, what do you call this?
Eyebrows,
pardon me. Gabatenayim, I've lived here too long, as I've said. Gabatenayim, who takes care? I'm not allowed to tell the barber says, Afshala tapel begabatenayim. I say, lo, ishtima tapelet. My wife's tweezers pulls out. Your beard, one white hair. One white hair. Loke, alav the oraita, lo tilbash. Wow. That, the Rambam doesn't end there. V'chein im tzava sa'aro shacha kishe yitzba sa'aro levana achat loke. Maimonides halacha lemaisa, you dye one hair, malkut, one hair. This is the tremendous problem. Wow. The Ravid jumps on him immediately. First of all, what do you mean malkut? One hair, that's a shear for malkut? The Gemara says, we'll see the Gemara later, not today, next week. The Gemara says, Asur, forbidden. But Loka? And number two, what's the whole purpose of dyeing your hair? When Natan had to meet Netanya, so he was worried the hair is not the red as it should be, and so he dyed a hair. You dye one hair. That makes it different. That changes everything. That accomplishes. People are going to realize you dyed one hair. It's not like someone whose beard's entirely white, and a day later they walk in with a brown beard. And this is the Rambam. Ah, my dear students, I have to tell you, the Reb Menashe Klein and Zof, with all his pupil and all of Sefer Chassidim, he's afraid lahatia halacha lemaisa because of the Rambam. And that's the way he ends his tshuva. Amnan ledina, halacha lemaisa, he quotes the Rambam, Umefarish the Gam Tzviat Seyar Zakein Beklal, V'chash V'chalila Lahakel B'zeh. And that's the way he paskins Halacha L'Maaseh. We're not finished, all right? Reb Menashe Klein, Reb Moshe Feinstein, the hair, the mirror, the dying. And now I take you. Natan, the silver era in American Jewish Orthodoxy. Rabbi Eliezer Silva and his generation. And what I'm quoting from, it all begins on page 289. Right? The Silva era, interesting volume. I just, Shabbos, we were talking in the house, and I made the point that the Silva era, of all that I've published, it's the one that had the widest influence, because it went into the Haredi world, and as you know, the Novominska gave me big haskama in public. It affects my thinking today, because my piece on rabbinic authority, I would like to publish in something that would get into the more Haredi world, at least the light Haredi world, the more open Haredi world, like the Silva era. But okay, we'll see what will be, Be'ezrat Hashem. But let's understand. In the United States of America growing up, there was very little Yiddishkeit before World War II. I told you the story, how my grandfather took me to the bakery, Pechter's, and he had me say Shema Yisrael for the foreman. Foreman gave me a quarter. I write about it in Washington, that giving me a quarter is like giving a kid $10 today for saying Shema Yisrael, maybe more than $10. You know, you can imagine everyone's assimilating. Here's a kid, at least he can say Shema Yisrael. Then World War II came. And World War II, you bring in the Satmar. The Malachim are now accepted in Peiru Vidas. Yeah, you follow me? The whole world is shifting and changing. And people are, it's the start of what today everyone calls the Chumrah of the week, the Chumrah of the month, looking for Chumrahs. I can never forget what I saw with my own eyes, heard with my own ears. I still see the sight in front of me. A shipping, a kid, I don't know where he's from, Williamsburg, learning in Lakewood. We had 110 kids in Lakewood, maybe 105 in my time. And this kid goes over to Rabbi Aaron Cutler. And he's saying something, and Rabbi Aaron, kid walks away, Rabbi Aaron turns away. We found out later, he went over to Rabbi Aaron Cutler, and he says, I'm Shuldik, you know, excuse me, but I have to rebuke the Rosh Yeshiva. He turns around during Atak Kodesh V'Shiddich Hazaras Hashas, right after Kedusha. He doesn't wait for the Bracha Ten. And he says, and kids are Shulchan Aruch, you know, statement of Afratin. Baron, you know, didn't rebuke him. He looked idiot. It's not like it's a Paiskim. Baron holds like he holds. And this raises the whole issue with the kids of Shulchan Aruch. It teaches the kids one way. Doesn't give the kid the feel, Shas and Paiskim and Machlokes Rishonim and Achronim and Psak Halacha. And there's so much to Halacha that goes beyond a black and white sefer. All right, I'm not here to tell you not to learn kids. It could be a kid has to be taught a framework, but already a kid of 11, 12, start to show him there's a live Torah. It was, everyone's pulse is different. This kid, I saw that with my own eyes. The story I heard afterwards, you know, everyone was talking, gossiping, and they said, that's nothing. They told the story in Borough Park. That is all written up in Silver Era. A kid comes to Reb Aaron's house, and I too was in Reb Aaron's house, but then it could be, I don't remember, it could be the Rebbetzin offered us tea, I don't remember. And the Rebbetzin puts out tea and cookies. And the Schnipp Yingle, this idiot, asks the Rebbetzin, what bakery did you buy it from? Okay. Mark, you're wondering what the connection is to here? So I'm quoting this transition. In other words, the pedanticness of Frumkeit that hit America, this transition was not without its whimsical results as well. A few novice students soon considered themselves even more pious than their own teachers. A student visiting with Rav Aaron asked his wife at which bakery the cake she served had been purchased. On another occasion, the Rosh Yeshiva was rebuked by a student in Lakewood for turning around after the Kedusha and not waiting for the cantor to complete the blessing. And I have a footnote there. Even Rav Yoel Teitelbaum of Satmar, who successfully reestablished his court in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn, was not spared from such indignities. A mirror in his home was broken by his Hasidim, who felt it improper for his wife to use such a profane contrivance. A mirror. Wow. That also made the newspapers, the gossip. But you understand, I don't know. When I look back now, maybe they were upset that the Satmar Ruf himself might look into the mirror occasionally. But imagine Rebbetzin Feiger. Her mirror broken. I want to thank Rabbi Grunstein. He sent me an email, and if you recall, a week ago, I mentioned that what's the halacha lemaisa, the mirror? And I said, it's very simple. If you stand in front of a mirror to see that your collar is proper, your tie is proper, your glasses are on, your kippah is on, your chveis, that's fine. But if you start to stand there like a woman, and well, when a woman gets to a mirror, skeiton, her hair and coloring and lips and whatnot, and powder and makeup, and oh my gosh, that's an isa d'oraita of Lotubash. So he writes as follows. Years ago as a kid, learning the Sif in Shulchan Aruch, that we quoted last week, that we'll quote again, I asked an elderly Rav, am I allowed to use a mirror? And his answer was exactly like yours. And I have to give my Talmud Yehoshua, the son of my Talmud Tzvi. Do you remember Tzvi? Remember his father? It was after your time? He's no longer alive, Lo Aleinu. He knows Yiddish, and he quotes what his Rebbe told him, Vadai Mutter, Seiten, ihr steht dort schon und kommt daher wie er frei. Translation, certainly it is Mutter, unless you stand in front of the mirror for an hour. And you comb your hair like a woman. And I think that's black and white, halacha lemaisa. And that's, of course, bochen lebavet Hashem. Only what Reb Menashe Klein said, Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. It could be sometimes something happened. I know when I had that eye infection, I couldn't just look at a mirror for a minute. I had to look and see where the eye drops are going and see that I was putting it in properly, and then I would close my eyes and open my eyes. All right. It's Bochein Levavat Hashem. But I love the story with Satmar. Even by Satmarad, even by Rav Aaron Kotler. Wow. The Frumkeit binge. The worst I ever heard with the Rav was my own Talmidim told me when David the Gabayim, I told you the story, the Rav had ulcers and he had to drink a lot of milk. And one time he turns around and he gives them a dollar, whatever it is, go out and buy me a quart of milk. And the Gabayim are talking to him. What does he mean? Does he mean Chalav Yisrael? And the Rav hears them, carrying on. And the Rav said, I mean a quart of milk, delved milk. You follow? The O-U-D, that's it. Get me a quart of milk. But Frumkeit got to us. And people from my ear in Lakewood tell me that no one can believe today that when Lakewood began, they used break stones. And I did a little research on break stones. It was East Europeish Yidden, East European Jews. In the end of the 19th century, they, on the east side, they organized a dairy. And it expanded. Break stones still exist until today. You know, in the New York area when I was there last, break stones. And they may have not even charged for Baron Kotler. These were Yidden, understood, even if they were not that frum anymore, but they still had the feeling, you know, it was that first and second generation in America where their school was that feeling. I remember in Lakewood where I was rabbi and built the shul from scratch. I remember Mrs. Laufer once told me off, you're a rabbi, where's your beard, where's this, where's that? And she, you know, her own kids, who knows what they were at already. But she yet was a Europeia. She was right. She had every right to tell me off. But all right, I had every right to be as I was. But you can understand it. But this is the swing, Baruch Hashem. And right, good, bad, until today you have people crying, Chumrah of the week, Chumrah of the month. All right, I always say, better chumras than kulas, okay? I live the way I live. I'm in a time warp. I see my Rebbe sitting right here listening to me. I hope he hugs me after this year like he did before my wedding. But, all right, you have to have self-confidence. The more you learn, the more you know, the more you understand, you have the confidence of Shas and Paiskim and your knowledge. On the other hand, I understand people, Balei Tshuva, and it's like I was told absolutely true story that they were washing in some event, and this lady says, am I allowed to wash? I don't have a ring to take off. She thought that taking off the ring, you know, before you wash was part of the whole, Balei Tshuva. Ah, God bless her. Okay. Let me go one step further and end off the class today. And it's very emotional for me because this is, I'm quoting now from Rab Chaim David Halevi of Tel Aviv. Natan, I taught his daughter, Nitzchia, was a sweetheart in Mechlala in the 70s. She's married to a big Talmud Chacham today. And if anyone listening knows Nitzchia Halevi, I don't know what her married name is, but I'm told I think he's in the Gush, etc., in that area, Rosh Kolel. Send my best regards to her. So her father, do you know, you know about her, Rav Chaim David Halevi, he was a Shem Dover, he was a Sfadik Rav, but very open to the modern world. He understood Tel Aviv, he understood the mentality. Very successful. Anyway, he published quite a number of Svarim, Halacha L'Maisa, there's Ke'ena Kitzah Shulchan Aruch, that all my grandchildren grew up with in the religious Zionist educational system, to Rav David Halevi. He wrote quite a number of volumes of Selech HaRav, answering questions. If you take a Selech HaRav, and this must be the first chelik, because I don't have anything else mentioned here. And I have a photograph. I hope I'm right. If I'm incorrect, correct me. Tshuva Nun. And what do you think he's dealing with? Exactly this question. Ani Ravak Halomeid Bi Yeshiva V'yeshli Sheila Ha'im Mutar Litzpoach Sarat Levanot B'Tzeva Shacha O Shezasu Mishim Lav V'lo Yubash Gevetz L'Nach Tisha V'ra'iti L'Rambam Shepasak La'asa Avol Ulai Efshar Lomar Shema Shekatuv Kein Hu Bizmanam Sherak HaNashim Hayu Nohagot Litzpoach Saran אבל בזמננו שגם גברים צובים סרוב ספרים, אולי מותר. And here you have the classic question. It's a young man learning in a yeshiva. Could be he's prematurely gray. I've had students that prematurely gray. I have one student, I think when he was 30 already, his hair was white. So here, he asked, am I allowed to dye my hair? And in other words, he's interested in getting married, and he's a Talmud Chacham. He quotes the Rambam, we just quoted, Asur. But he makes the point that maybe the Rambam's time, only women dyed hair. Nowadays, plenty of men dye hair. I know one man, we asked Malka about it, and she reminded me he had a transplant done. It's exactly my age. But they're very, in that family, they're very good looking. Too good looking. All children married, divorced. Too good looking. And he had something done in his hair. What can I do? You lose your hair, you lose your hair. You grow older. You have to face reality. I always say, Baruch Hashem, we're alive and kicking. That I'm older. 85 is 85. It's you're not 25, 35, 85. Okay, Baruch Hashem. I remember there was a movie actress who turned 50, and I remember they interviewed her. I read it was years ago, but I love what she answered. Are you going to do this? Your face, your makeup, the face, and have your forehead. You know, cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery. And she said, I've earned the right to be 50 and act like I'm 50. It's a good answer. Well, Baruch Hashem. And this poor person is asking, and he knows the Rambam, but maybe it's changed when males dye their hair as well. And Rav David Halevi quotes the Rambam, quotes La Halacha, quotes the fact that it may be a Nisa D'oraita, according to the Rambam, that maybe Malkut. He also quotes the Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya Kuf Pei Bet Halacha Vav. Asul l'kolt afilu se'ar achat lavan mitoch ha'shechorot mishim lo yubash geva v'chein asul l'ish l'tzpo asarot lavanot she'yiyu shechorot afilu se'ara achat v'chein asul l'ish l'histakel b'mareh. And you see, the Shulchan Aruch here, while he's repeating the words of the Rambam, it could be he sides with the Ra'abat, could be, it's not a Chayiv Malkut, it's Asher, but it's not a Chayiv Malkut yet, one hair. And you see the Lashon, Asur Lukot. And here he mentions the mirror, and look into the Taz. The Taz says, yes, this is feminism, this is emulating a woman. However, what about if the hair was black and he wanted to dye it white? And the Taz says, absolutely permissible. You see, could be some people don't turn white. You're 70 years of age and your beard is not white. You want to dye it white? In the Torah world, when do you become the Gadol Hadar? Well into your 80s and 90s. Rav Shach. Natan, we knew about Rav Shach in Bernard Revel Graduate School. His son sat right next to me, Effie. Forget his father's a Rebbe in Hadarom, Panavim. Father turns 8, the Gadol Hadar, Rav El Yashiv. 80, mid-80s, Rav El Yashiv. Rav Kenevsky. Wow, wow. What a, so, Mark, you're a big Lamdan, but you have one problem. Your beard is black. No one is listening to you. You want to dye it white. So, you see, the Taz quotes other Achronim, black and white, 100% mutar, permissible. So you see, dying per se is not the Yisa. The Yisa is feminism, to look younger. Why does a woman dye her hair? Why does she have cosmetic surgery? I'm related through marriage to one of the biggest female doctors in Israel, who, one of the pioneers of cosmetic surgery for women. I would tell you, the most famous women in Israel go to her. And can't say a word. Wow. That's black, white to black. But black to white, no Shaila. Well, he goes further and he says, look, the majority of the Mefarshim, the majority of the Rishonim, all feel that it's not an Issa Torah. There is no Makot. It's just, we would say, a fallout from a feminism, lo tilbash. And here, where there may be what we can call medical, psychological reasons for you wanting to dye your beard. And he quotes the sources, we've quoted it over the weeks, for medical reasons, for health, absolutely permissive. In your case, you want to marry, and a person wishes to marry, this is no different than a medical reason. It is psychologically, emotionally pressing. I'm inclined, lahakel, to be mater. And even though you say it's genevedat, that the woman will meet you, all right, as you get to know each other, and she'll accept you for who you are, what you are, well, you can tell her. And Rav David HaLevi says, I'm quite sure she will not be upset by this knowledge. It will not interfere with the shidduch. However, halacha lemaisa, he paskins two addendums. One, I will only paskin this way, halacha lemaisa, if two other rabbanim agree me, because the Rambam Shita, it does involve a fallout from Isurei Torah. שני תלמידי חכמים יצטרפו לחטא זה. And finally, Yomo, he adds, this heter is only before you're married. What about if he wants to continue dyeing his beard after he's married? At that time, you'll have to ask the she'ila again. You follow? And I can understand it. He has a young wife, and he's walking around with a white beard. Doesn't feel comfortable. Maybe he wants to continue dyeing his beard. Interesting. This is Rav Chaim David Halevi. He was a wonderful Rav. He was the right Rav for Tel Aviv. You follow? It was a match, if I can paraphrase, a match made in heaven. And you have to have mazel. This is with the Rabbanot. I don't have to tell you. I just heard this morning with a shul in Florida that big machloket in the shul, part of the Balabatim left, established another shul. And what's the machloket about? The rabbi, I know the family. I know the young man as well. He should be a wonderful rabbi. But he came out against the corona vaccination. And it split the Balabatim. Some support, some negative. What kind of rabbi do we have? And you know, you have to have mazel with the shtela to be the right rabbi and the right shtela. It's hakol tolui b'mazel, afilu seicha Torah shebeheichel. No one could have said it better than the Zohar. And even the Sefer Torah you take out, which one do you choose? This is mazel. So my dear students sitting in front of me, are there any questions? Okay, first of all, I want to thank you for honoring me with your presence. And Yomo, can you open up the world and you become more valuable and more important with everyone shifting back to the States? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Recording stopped.
Unmute.
Rebbe, you know, every year the Mamad schools have a person they focus on.
Right.
So this year it's Nachama Leibowitz.
Oh, very
like
nice.
In our daughter's gown, there's a picture right when you come in. So I said to her Ganenet, you know, her grandmother learned with Nachama Leibowitz.
The big yichus. Now, wait a minute. Now I understand why my great granddaughter had to do a paper on the Nachama Leibowitz. Now I understand.
Yeah, yeah, they make a book about them. They have speeches. I think they came to one of the schools. They came and they put on a whole play about her life to the kids.
Very nice. She is so deserving. But you see, what has to be stressed that she was a Lamdanit and Torah, but not a feminist. That's the important thing. There was no break of halacha. Her derechevitz for Rabbanim was legendary. And I suffered. I told you I suffered. Every time we were together for Shabbat Machon Gold, I couldn't eat. She kept on bothering me with questions about the Rav and what he said here and what he did here. And it was like a sponge that wanted to absorb as much as possible. Good to hear your voice. I want to thank everyone. The screen is filled, honoring me. And tomorrow I wouldn't miss the shiur for anything. I got a lot of compliments in last week's shiur. In my humble opinion, I didn't say anything last week. But tomorrow I'm going to introduce you to Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. And you'll see sources. Wow, what an individual. I had the privilege of knowing or being exposed to great people or to people who knew great people intimately. Are there any more questions from around the world? Anyone is sitting in New York? Mark, how's the weather? Is it as bad as they say here in the Israeli news? They have you equal to Moscow in weather. I heard already, it's quite bad. Baruch Hashem, we're here. And today, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewarded us. No rain. It's beautiful out, but the problem is the ground still wants rain, so later this week we'll see how we stand. All right, Yomong, yeah?
Starting tomorrow night, Monday night, and Tuesday, Wednesday, is
going to
be another washout.
Yes, Yomong tells me starting tomorrow night, Tuesday, Wednesday, another washout, and believe me, you don't make me happy. I wish the rain would be limited to the nighttime, like the Medrash Rabbah says, Leil Revigi and Leil Shabbat. But okay, I want to thank everyone, and I may HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us a great week with endless Besorot Tovot until we meet again in health and happiness. Das V'Danya.